Well, I hope everybody had a good Thanksgiving. We're back from the Thanksgiving weekend with some MTEs. A lot of them we couldn't actually have watched because they were on Flow Hoops or not televised anywhere. So apparently some of the league teams picked the wrong MTEs for viewing pleasure. But a lot of games got in this last week, so we know a little bit more. Zach and Greg, welcome to the podcast.
Glad to be here. A lot of like-level games this week, so a little bit more to chew on, I think.
Yeah, there is more to chew on. I know North Dakota was radio only. Kansas City was through Flow Hoops, so there was a lot I was able to catch on the radio and stuff, but not as much viewing as usual, but plenty of games. So I wanted to start out with KenPom and just talk a little bit about projections. So the KenPom projections was actually spread out just a little bit. South Dakota and Kansas City spread out the bottom two in KenPom projections, and South Dakota State went up a game. But the three KenPom has projected the 3 through 8 teams in the Summit League within two games of each other at the end of the season, from 9-7 to 7-9, and then nobody with less than 6 wins and nobody with more than 11 wins. So my first question for the two of you, that's kind of what we've talked about a little bit. It's going to be a lot closer this year. Is it going to be that close?
I think so. Like in years past, we've always had 2 or 3 teams in the 300s. Now, as you can see, only one right now in Kansas City sitting at 302. So the bottom has statistically improved. The top, I'm curious about it because we got South Dakota State sitting there at 133. I think that's probably a tad high from them. We have Oral Roberts at 181. I definitely think that's high for them right now based on the things that they've accomplished. And then outside of that, you got a bunch of teams in the 200s. So, I mean, that's what the body of work is telling us so far. Now, when Matt Mims comes back, you know, when some of these things get sorted out, maybe, you know, there's a little bit more of a separation. But, I mean, as just like – based on the eye test, you're watching some of these teams and you can see, Oral Roberts has flaws. South Dakota State does have some flaws. North Dakota State, I think, is playing the best out of the whole bunch, and they're sitting there at KenPom 221. I think that second half at Grand Canyon kind of exposed some things as well. So it should be very competitive. I agree. I think Mr. Ken Pomeroy has it pretty dialed in right now.
Well, and we're lucky enough to be able to rank 360 plus teams and do it pretty effectively. Like, it's the best we're going to get. It's the one flaw that KenPom does have a little bit is that where you start in the season, in the rankings tends to be where you stay for a while, unless something dramatic happens one way or the other. So, South Dakota State started right around 100 and they're 2-4 right now. And yet, they're still at 133. So now had they lost to plus 300 teams, they would have dropped pretty big. But when you lose to teams that are ranked higher than you, you don't tend to drop much in the KenPom rankings because you lost to teams that are higher than you.
Yeah, that's a good point. South Dakota State and Oral Roberts, huge beneficiaries of that.
Right.
I believe both of them are lower right now than where they started. And yeah, it's a little skewed. Ideally, you'd start maybe a week or two in, but you know, for the sake of conversation, and because this is so data-driven, I think, you know, obviously with each passing week, this should only get more and more accurate as there's a bigger body work to quantify the stats from.
Right.
Well, to your point, that's where they start. I mean, that's a huge advantage for many. And I still think it's he's got the top three teams, I think, in a reasonable spot. Every team has their flaws. And I mean, some of the teams are going to have even the rankings. I mean, even the over the last 2 days have changed in projections as far as what they were going to have for win-loss totals in the league. Yeah. I think South Dakota dropped a little bit. Denver bumped up, I believe. And so it's until you get a complete body of work or a complete non-conference schedule in front of you where they can actually – somewhat evaluate, and I do like his rankings. I really do because I think he looks at them in a manner. It's all the statistical aspect of it, but at the same time, a lot yet to be determined. South Dakota State still, I think, is the most complete team in the league. Oral Roberts and NDSU. And NDSU, I think, has a chance to be really good. And Grand Canyon's a very good team. Grand Canyon's,
yeah.
You know, their performance in the second half, you have to give them Grand Canyon credit. They pulled away, but it wasn't so much because of what NDSU didn't do well. It was much more because of what Grand Canyon did well. So, I think it's going to be a wide-open league this year. I do think South Dakota State and the other top teams deserve to be where they're at, but so much yet to be determined. Who's going to get healthy? Who's going to get their experienced players back? That's going to factor into everything at a very high level. So it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out.
You know, the thing that gives me a little bit more confidence in this is, like, last year, ton of newcomers, right? Ton of newcomers, a lot of turnover. There were some high-profile players that left the conference, like Max Asmus and Grant Nelson, but by and large, there's a lot of returners in the league this year. We were talking about who's the newcomer of the year this year, and we really had to search for names outside of Lahat Shun, and that was kind of basically it, you know? So this should be a little bit more representative of where things are compared to last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see, so right now, North Dakota is fourth, Denver is fifth in the KenPom rankings with Summit League teams. And I think that those are two teams that have shown some things in this early season. So, you know, we can quibble about the numbers exactly where they should be. But it is, the cream is rising with teams that are doing better. So as a metric, it's the best thing you're going to get. St. Thomas has dropped a little bit, who has looked rough from time to time. South Dakota is probably the outlier to me, still at 285. I think they've looked more middle of the summit than ninth or eighth. Sorry, there's nine teams now this year. Anybody that really you think will end up in a much better spot when the KenPom rankings wrap up, or way down from where they are right now? North Dakota State's another team, and Zach, you already said this, even outside of South Dakota, North Dakota State is one where they're at 221. They feel like an under 200. They're more in the South Dakota State, probably even a little above Oral Roberts from what I've seen this year.
Well, North Dakota State's got three games in the next, 10 days. You know, they've got San Jose State twice. They've got Portland at home. That'll determine a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah, well.
And St. Thomas, they are what they are. They're always going to be a difficult out at their place. They're more than capable of going on the road and controlling tempo and taking care of the ball and stealing a win or two. But go to North Dakota. UND's done a nice job. I mean, when you look at the quality wins they've got, the close wins they got on the road, granted they're neutral court, but still, I think they've really stepped up and a few of the pieces. Eli King, I don't even think he scored today. But I still think his athleticism and strength at that point guard spot is going to be good for them. It looks like Coach Sather has kind of settled on a rotation. And Omont was bad for a good portion of the game today and then was big down the stretch. Eagle Staff, and to your point, I think off the air, Todd, is Eagle Staff developing and, could he be a star? That kid's figured it out. He's as good offensively as a lot of perimeters are in the league. And I think he has a great feel for the game on the defensive end. It's just a matter of making those plays. But, their size, their length, their versatility, I don't know that anybody in the league has made more of an improvement than North Dakota has. And that's just based on some early season results. But you got to give them a lot of credit. It was a good week for them.
Yeah, I think, you take a look at the teams that could potentially improve. The one qualifier, and I feel like we have to add this to everything that we talk about here, but, these teams are playing drastically different schedules.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that plays out. You want to talk about the teams that may rise. I mean, really it comes down to who has games on their schedule that they can really learn from. Greg, you're talking about the upcoming schedule for North Dakota State. I mean, if you're looking at San Jose at San Jose, then San Jose State at home, And then Portland, I mean, those are if they get one of those three games, that's a big deal. But the flip side of that is they could lose those next three and then be kind of looking at the end of the non-conference schedule with like, man, you know, we feel pretty good about ourselves. Zach likes us, but we got Montana at Montana and that, and then at Western Michigan. And like, that's basically it to show for wins. You know, it's kind of a tough scene, and they're obviously going to get dinged in the net ranking for that too. You know, Oral Roberts is another team where it's just like, man, if they don't beat Tulsa, they may have two Division I wins in the non-conference schedule. So, like, yeah. what do we make of that? Meanwhile, you know, a team like, you know, we can go back to North Dakota, and you can say what you want, and I do largely agree to the point that Greg made, I think it was last podcast, where it's just like, man, these teams need different things. That's why they schedule different ways. But you look at the schedule that UND has, it had an opportunity to play three like-level games over the course of about the last week or so, that I think they learned probably – they're learning and growing the most out of any of these teams, in my opinion. And then coming up, they play at Fullerton, at Riverside, Portland, Utah Tech, and then, well, Northern Colorado in the Big Sky Challenge. But, I mean, a lot of like-level games. They're learning how to win. They're developing toughness that comes along with it. And you just wonder if that's lost on some of these teams, that there's just not much in their non-conference schedule. I guess we'll see how it works out in the end. But, I mean, you know, Denver's doing a pretty good – like their schedule is pretty good. You know, going at Texas A&M Commerce, who's not a great team, but again, Division I wins on the road, I think that's a big deal. So they got their first road win, but they have Idaho, and you know, outside of that, you know, some higher level games, some Colorado State, BYU, things like that as well. So, you know, I don't really know what to make of this. Tal, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, we bagged on scheduling a lot, but I will say, with these MTEs, one of the things that Summit League teams did a good job of is they found these MTEs where they got a chance for two or three games against like level opponents in a short period of time. And, you know, you talked about Denver going to Texas A&M Commerce. You know, they're probably a 300 Ken Pom team, but that's like going to Kansas City and mm-hmm. and getting on the road. And so it does prepare you for league type schedule games, you know, different. I'm sure Texas A&M Commerce is very different than Kansas City, but at least gives you that opportunity. It's honestly the only bad part of this last week was that just a lot of it was either in flow hoops, which I don't have, or some of them just don't have didn't have TV at all, or even you know, I'm always amazed that my son's fifth grade team can stream on Game Changer, and yet we can't find a way for without even, you know, I don't need commentary. Like, I can just watch the thing on whatever somebody's camcorder they set up or whatever, but through the website. But it was nice to listen to the UND games on the radio. I was at the new Hunger Games movie with an earpiece in, listening to the North Dakota game. So, yeah, it's I kind of lost my train of thought. I'm not even sure where I was going with that, but yeah.
But I'll go back to this. And people don't want to hear it. It's a one bid league. I give so little credence to the non-conference schedule. Don't get me wrong. There are some bad losses at times. There are some really high quality wins. But really, it comes down to each coach and his team. Are you finding a way to get better? Are you figuring some things out? Are you locking in on a rotation? And those are the things that matter, because who cares what you do non-conference? If you go 11-5 and win the league this year, nobody cares about your non-conference schedule. And there's such a broad range of teams that people are playing right now. And it's interesting for us because we get to watch it. We get to evaluate whether it's a box score or the actual performance, if there's an opportunity to watch it. Those are things that are enjoyable to watch and see how things are developing. The KenPom is, I think he's really good at what he does, but to me it's so irrelevant in a one bid league, because it really comes down to, once you lock into your conference schedule, what kind of level of confidence have you built in your non-conference schedule? How have you handled it if you've underperformed in the eyes of idiots like us, or idiots like me at least? But it's just, it really comes down to, how are you developing and growing your team? And it's fun to watch it play out. I still think South Dakota State probably deserves to be the favorite. But there's a number of different teams that have shown out well in this non-conference schedule. And regardless of what the KenPom rating of their opponent is that they defeated or whatever it might be, if they're making progress in the eyes of the coach, that's what matters. And if they're gaining confidence, that's important to that program.
Well, yeah. Nobody illustrated that better than the point that you're making than NDSU last year, right? I mean, non-conference.
Or Denver on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, Denver got off to that great start, and we were talking about, boy, you know, what do we have here? Meanwhile, NDSU is losing every single game and, you know, end up at opposite ends of the spectrum at the end of the year. So,
yeah. One bit of maybe news, Caleb Stewart with South Dakota left the game against Air Force today. Stepped funny, and it looked like it was maybe a knee thing. He didn't come back into the game. You know, who am I to speculate? But it didn't look the greatest. He did walk off it. So if he were to be out for South Dakota, he's probably their most consistent backcourt scorer. That would be a tough loss for them.
Yeah, they definitely were relying on him a lot. And Greg brought up a really good point about teams are tinkering with their lineups. Basically, every single team has been tinkering with their lineup, except for like maybe Denver, I think.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, UND, different lineup. NDSU, different lineup. South Dakota State, different lineup. They have the footer in the starting lineup now.
Yeah. And he's looked pretty decent the last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's earning his keep, man. It's interesting. Yeah. Some of these guys come in and they're ready to go right away. And now all of a sudden South Dakota State has five guys that can all dribble, pass, and shoot, and they're now harder to guard because of that. Will and Kyle will still play a big role going forward, but offensively, they're going to be difficult. They're going to be difficult to guard. There's no one to help off of, so I'll be curious to see how that plays out. But teams are not satisfied. Teams are still, you know, even when it's players that have been in the program for 2 or 3 years, they're still kind of waiting for roles to be seized, you know. And it's a lot of people think, oh, the coaching staff's doing this or that. It's like, no. These players are the ones that are citing this, or these players are the reason for the indecision on the other side of it too. So
the most recent example, Amar. How do you say Amar's last name, Zach?
Kuhovic.
Kuhovic. Yeah, has that nice game off the bench and then starts today. He every time reminds me of one of those guys that a team sends a person out to go scout because his numbers are high at junior college level. And they go, he just isn't big enough, or he isn't just this, he isn't. Yet he finds a way to get to that ball every time. I mean, he every rebound, even, you know, I was only listening on the radio, but he got an offensive rebound today that basically sealed it.
He just gets himself in a position every single time. He just gets himself in a position. There's nothing, you know, unique about his physical capabilities. He gets himself in a position, and he forced himself into the rotation, and now he's forced himself into the starting lineup. I mean, they had no choice, but not that they didn't want to, but like, He made it, and Dang Mayar, I think, got a DNP-CD today. So, you know, again, everybody's still a work in progress, even the teams that are winning.
Yeah.
And to that point, and Todd, you mentioned it, I think he got an offensive rebound and a missed free throw. UND missed like three free throws down the stretch that could have sealed it, but he got a key offensive rebound, got himself to the line, and they ate up a little bit more clock. That was a huge win for UND on the road. But you go back to, you know, guys establishing their roles, guys that are a little more – we don't have a ton of them in the league, but one of them is Bowden Skunberg, and I think you've talked about him, Todd. He had a heck of an effort at Grand Canyon, big numbers. He continues to grow as a player, continues to grow as a kid that picks and chooses his spots wisely offensively. And I think you and I talked with him down in Sioux Falls, too. I think he's a kid that's pretty hungry right now and believes that this NDSU team could be pretty good.
Yeah. You know, Greg, we're going to have interviews with him, Sotene, and Anderson Kopp today. So since you rolled into Bowden, let's just listen to Bowden, and then we'll talk about that. Hey, everybody. We're excited to have with us today Bowden Skunberg from North Dakota State Basketball. Bowden, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, so I'll start out, but Greg and I will probably just take turns asking questions. I'm curious, as a
young man from North Dakota, what's it like to go to North Dakota State, stay in state, and kind of have that state pride almost of like being able to represent your home state?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of just going to NDSU was for me. It was because I had a lot of family in North Dakota, you know, and, you know, growing up so close to Fargo, just knowing how big just the green and gold was for the whole state. And I think it was, you know, looking back now, it was like, I think I'm right where I wish I was when I was a kid.
Nice.
Bowden, we've talked about this a little bit. You know, when you come to North Dakota State as a young man, that it was a high offensive output player, and you kind of earned your way onto the floor by establishing yourself as one of the better defenders in the Summit League. Talk a little bit about that transformation. Talk a little bit about how that kind of forced you to mature into a more complete player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my freshman year was sort of a reality check for me, as in a standpoint of like, I can't just go and just chuck up all these shots now. And, you know, Dave made that clear. And I think I had to, in order to get playing time, I had to start by playing defense, you know, then excelling in my role. And then, you know, things just started opening up and my role expanded bigger and bigger. And I think that was just a huge part of, you know, becoming just more of an all-around player, like you said.
Absolutely. And you deserve a lot of credit because you have expanded your offensive game. And I just want to compliment you on how just demonstrating the value of becoming a well-rounded player and how important that is to teams that want to compete for championships.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, like, this offense is one side of the court. That's 50% of the game, but people tend to neglect, you know, just defense. And I think, you know, it's just, I think being a kid from North Dakota who's, you know, people here, they're gritty, they're hardworking, and, you know, I think it's just in my blood, and I like playing a little defense now. You know, I think it's good, sure.
Well, and we talked a little bit about your role, and I remember last year at the tournament during the press conferences, Coach Richmond talked a lot about your growth as a leader and kind of, I don't know how exactly to put it, but like a mainstay of the program. Yep. And going into this year, have you approached that any different this year than you did in previous years, now that you knew that was kind of going to be your role coming in, or has it been just a continual growth?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, you never get perfect at anything. You continue to just get better at everything. But Dave's continued to, you know, to challenge me to be a better leader, to, you know, put others first. And I think that's kind of the next step in my game is, if we're going to be a great team, I have to share my experience and help lead these younger guys, because we got a younger team here. And I think, you know, and they're going to play a big part in it. I think the more I can help them out, this, I'll play a big role in everything.
Talk a little bit about your teammate, Andrew Morgan, you know, and his growth. There's going to be some expanded opportunity, you know, because of some departures. But talk about his development and how you and he have both kind of grown in this program together. Talk a little bit about Andrew's development.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's going to get so much attention this year. So he's a big part about what we're going to do. I think you'll probably see a lot of doubles this year. And I think it'll be great if he continues to, you know, expand, you know, just getting others involved, because he's going to see a lot of attention. But he's going to get a lot of buckets too. He's a dominant force, and I think he'd be a challenge to guard. But then if he can start facilitating and get others involved, I think he'll be a tough team to stop.
So with Grant moving on to another school, will we see anything different offensively or defensively with the team, or is it just kind of going to be rolling out with different players in that role?
I mean, Grant was a unique guy. I mean, like, kind of, we did a lot of things around him a little bit, so there will be a lot of changes. But I think, you know, we'll be just fine. We got plenty of dogs, good players in the locker room. But, you know, that's kind of a role and a thing, a place you can't really fill. And you just kind of try to fill it in different ways. But, you know, I think we'll be just fine.
Nice. Well, and us as the media did you guys a favor. We picked you second. So you can say, well, look at, they're disrespecting us. We put you first.
Exactly. You know, I like you said that because you know, we like putting a little chip on our shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of adds fuel to the fire, and we like it a little bit.
Right. So.
Well, Bowden, we've already watched you. We've enjoyed watching you develop over the course of your career, and you play in a program that expects to come down to Sioux Falls, you know, the place you're sitting right now, and compete for champions, march in and march out, put it that way. And you guys have demonstrated the ability to be able to do that. And we want to wish you the absolute best this upcoming season.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. So we talked a little North Dakota State already. One thing I do want to mention, just from watching that Grand Canyon game, I think Grand Canyon is like 70 KenPom, but boy, do they look like a Power 5, athleticism, all those things. And North Dakota State had a big first half lead, then let that kind of slip away. They were still up at half, and then the second half just got away from them. But one of the things from that game that I noticed I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts as well. Well, two things. Bowden, he's a star in this league. I think that was pretty clear, especially in the first half. And then the other young guards, like, there's just so much growth from last year. I mean, it shows what you, if you can keep a group together, they just don't look the same a lot of times that second year in a program that they did the first year. Any other thoughts from the interview or just North Dakota State in general?
Well, first of all, I want to take credit because I made an attempt to make that be a segue in, you know, my comments into the Bowden Scumberg interview. So I'm glad you followed
with that. That wasn't an attempt. That was perfect. It was right on.
But you are right. I love watching that kid develop. And I think Dave has held him to a high standard. And he's challenged him in a lot of ways. And you're right. He was really good against Grand Canyon in that game. And continues to, I think he continues to grow. I think he continues to recognize when and where his opportunities are, and does a nice job. And then to your point, Todd, the growth and development of the other perimeters is impressive. Jakari White continues to earn a ton of minutes, and Damari Wheeler-Thomas is the prototypical point guard. In this day and age of positionless basketball, that kid is really, really good. And Dave Richmond's going to put as much on his plate as he possibly can.
Yeah, Jakari White might have shown the most growth of any of those. I mean, he's really shown a lot this year.
Agree.
Yeah, certainly taking advantage of the opportunity that's been, or I should say that he's earned. But yeah, Bowden Scumberg, I mean, he's everything you could want in a shooting guard in this league. He was not out of place on that court at all. I think it, you know, maybe some of the other players got exposed just a touch. But he was just very comfortable out there on offense and defense. And no question, he's the heartbeat of this team. And especially for a kid being from North Dakota, what a dream. But you guys are right. It didn't come easy. And I think every college basketball player needs to study his career arc because, you know, it didn't come easy. He earned it. And the things that got him onto the court, I think everybody could learn from as well. And he's a kid that just gets it. And I don't think it's a coincidence that NDSU keeps producing kids like this. I mean, there's a reason why they're, you know, second to none, maybe on par with South Dakota State, but really second to none in terms of the way that they run their program and the continuity that they've been able to achieve. And that's really their secret sauce, is the continuity. If you're bringing in new players every year, you know, I don't care how talented they are, you're just never really going to get to your potential unless you're together for 2, 3, 4, 5 years and you really can understand it and feel it, and it just sort of permeates the whole program. And so, yeah, Grand Canyon's a good program, had a little bit more talent than NDSU, but NDSU pushed them. NDSU made Grand Canyon uncomfortable. They got Grand Canyon out of their man-to-man defense and really into a zone defense, which my guess is we're probably not going to see a ton out of Grand Canyon this year. And, you know, I think NDSU probably found out some things about themselves that they didn't really know, particularly with their zone offense. My guess is they've, you know, ran out of practice, but, you know, hardly anybody runs zone anymore, so they probably don't spend a ton of time on it. Well, now that game film's out there, you're probably, you know, NDSU's probably going to see zone a few more times this year. Teams are probably going to have that in their back pocket. But if I'm NDSU, I'm glad that got exposed this year, this early in the year. You know, if you do have a weakness out there, you want to find out about it as soon as possible so you can adjust it and adjust to it. You don't want to find out about it in the Summit League tournament. You want to find out about the non-conference schedule. So, I you know, even though it wasn't a win, I think that's a big positive. They got to play in a great atmosphere. You know, Bowden just solidified himself as a star in this league. And they got a paycheck and some things to work on. So, I think they're happy all around.
Zach, you bring up a really good point, and we talked about it a little bit on Twitter. You know, that could expose them. Will some teams look at that and try to throw some zone at them? And I don't disagree. They may very well do that. And that's one of the things where I think Bowden Scumberg, to me, would be the ideal high post, get the entry into the high post against the zone because of the way he's expanded his floor game, his ability to make his teammates better by delivering, his ability to score in a variety of ways, whether it's, you know, shooting the perimeter shot or his using his physical strength physical strength to score at the rim, I think that would be ideal. And it's a great point. You made a good point. I think that's something that North Dakota State will probably prepare themselves for and say, how can we attack this better? And if we can do a good job against teams that can't play that 2-3 zone as well as Grand Canyon with their athletes, they'll be better prepared for that if and when they should have to experience it.
Well, and one thing that showed in the Grand Canyon game too, Grant Foster, their best player, guarded by Bowden Skunberg as well. So not only, again, we've talked about his, he had to start on the defensive end, but that's still his role. It's not like he, you know, became the leading scorer and now he's still taking on the top scorer on the other team.
Right.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit to sort of Kansas City, but I'm going to, it's something we talked about before we went on the air today. And that's just college basketball is changing a little bit. And I think the best example the Summit League has right now is Kansas City. That we're moving more and more to outside shooting, more and more to so Kansas City now, I mean, I don't know what the percentage of 3-point shots that they're taking, but it's a big portion of their offense. And one of the things that I noticed earlier today is you've got Alan Mukeba, who last year averaged 28 minutes a game, now is averaging 15, and Jeff Ngandu, who averaged 25 last year and now 7. They've got Ivan Coley, who came in from Missouri State, but he's only averaging 15, their other kind of big man. And they've got Cameron Foss and Jamar Brown, two transfers, both shooting over 42% from three. And that's with 6 or 7 attempts per game for both of them. Their shooters struggling the most, and who we're going to hear from here in a minute, is Anderson Kopp, shooting about 31%. But I think between the three of them, they're averaging 18 threes a game. Is this just the way college basketball is going? Has Kansas City maybe found something that might help them be more successful in the future? Is there just an analytic thing that those are worth 3 points, other baskets are worth 2? And if we can shoot a high enough percentage, that's kind of where the NBA is now, right?
Yeah, the key caveat is always like if you're good at it, you know, right. It's just like, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, I think sometimes you fit a square peg in a round hole, you know. It's just I'll kind of reserve judgment on exactly what's going on in Kansas City because they are really tinkering with their lineup. And, you know, what we were the most sure about coming into this year when it comes to Kansas City was their front court, right? And it is totally – I mean, it's all over the place. You know, McCabe is playing 14 minutes a game. Promise Idiaru is playing 10 minutes a game.
But I think he's only played in a couple.
Right. We thought Babacar Diallo was going to be a big part of what they do. He's only played in 4 games. He's played 8-minute game. Tyler Andrews, all they could talk about how he was a future pro, and he's played in 6 games, but he's playing 6 minutes a game. Right. Jeff Ngandu, who we were super high on, he's only playing 5 minutes. He's playing 7 minutes a game. I'm not saying that's wrong. And so, Promise Idiaru is playing 10 minutes a game. Precious Idiaru, I don't think he's played at all this year. Yeah. Maybe he's hurt, but he probably is hurt. But, you know, the front line is a huge question mark right now. And I don't know what to make of that. Like I said, I don't want to jump to conclusions, but that is definitely noteworthy. That is very, very noteworthy.
And it's because interesting because they recruited that. I mean, that seemed to be a point in their recruiting their first year.
And honestly, get all that size in. Yeah. And they got these guys. I think a lot of people in the league are just like, boy, we can't find anybody that looks like that. And they got like 3 or 4 of them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But for whatever reason, it's kind of gone pear-shaped there. And you're right there. It's all about guards, all about shooting threes. And again, it's just like, I get the effective field goal percentage. I get all that. But it's like, what if that's not what you do best? So. Well,
and in fairness, the Foss and Brown they both can shoot the ball. Like sure. I'm sure part of it. They, sure. Especially Cameron Foss, that guy might be the best shooter in the league. And this league is full of shooters. That gets that thing off quick, and he's shooting 44% or something. But you'd think you'd want. I mean, I wouldn't mind Alan Mukeba being down low after I'm shooting threes to start collecting a few of those after I
that's just it. There'd be a lot of offensive rebounds to be had. You know, if you want to shoot those threes, go ahead. But put some people out there that could extend them some possessions. So anyway, I don't it's really puzzling. I would stop short of saying alarming. I'm just watching it very curiously as how it's going to play out.
And I it's for Kansas City as well as it is for every other team. It's coaches experimenting and saying, what does it take to get us the most ready to be, you know, the best team we can be in the Summer League, could be the team that is most difficult for other teams to match up with. And then also, what's the best group of personnel that we can coach most effectively and we can get the highest level of results out of? That's really what it is. Because, I mean, we're talking here, we're at three observers going, well, here's what we think. But they're the ones going, all right, what gives us the best chance to be successful once Summit League play rolls around? And what we don't know is who's at 100%, who's at 70%, who do we need to sit and get healthy. It's our job as innocuous podcasters to have these observations. You know, I just think it depends on what the matchups look like. It depends on what's their number one priority, what gives them the best chance to win a non-conference game, or what gives them the best chance to be ready for Summit League conference play when it rolls around. And that stuff all factors into it to a certain extent. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, we've heard so many coaches, especially the new coaches that come into the Summit League. And we've asked them, Todd, even in our interviews, what surprised you or what have you noticed about the Summit League? To the coach, to the person, every single one of them says, we're amazed at how skilled the Summit League is, at how well they execute, at how well they shoot the ball, things along those lines. So when you look at a team like Kansas City that was structured around length, defensive, causing chaos defensively, are they trying to say, well, we have to factor into what gives us the best chance to be successful in the Summit League? And they might, you know, it just depends on what wins out in the long run. But some teams might think, hey, we need to get more skilled. We need to put more shooters on the floor. Guys that can make shots. There's, you know, difference between shooters and makers, but it just depends on what their thought process is throughout the non-conference schedule, to be honest with you. And so what their rotations might look like right now might be completely different once Summit League schedule sets in.
Right. It's just interesting because the players returning are the ones, the minutes are way down.
Yeah. I agree.
And we were sitting here last week talking about like, oh, geez, you know, they, you know, played a couple non-division one games. You know, what do we have here? We don't really know. They played a couple non-division one, and then they played like Baylor and Colorado State. So, you know, a bunch of non-competitive games. You know, they played UNC Greensboro, pretty good team. Played them tough, only lost by 10. Brown lost in overtime. Middle Tennessee lost by 4. You know, those are three good teams. And, you know, if a bounce goes a different way or if a couple of extra shots go down and they beat one or two of those teams, of those group of three teams, you know, we're probably singing a very different tune. Not that we're, like, getting negative on the situation. But, you know, again, a lot of it is comes down to we just don't know. Like, literally, we've been able to watch, like, one or two of their games, and something's up. We just don't know what yet.
And all Colorado State did was destroy Creighton the other day.
Yeah, no kidding.
Colorado State is really good.
From a
person in the state of Minnesota, there's a lot of people that wondered what if Nico was with the Gophers, how that would have turned out.
So the
leading scorer with Kansas City, we had a chance to sit down with Anderson Kopp during Summit League Media Day. So let's listen to the interview with Anderson Kopp, and then we'll go from there.
Hi, everybody. We've got Anderson Kopp with us today from Kansas City Ruse Men's Basketball. Anderson, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
So Greg and I will just probably take turns asking questions, and but I wanted to start out with, so last year played in 4 games, then you lost the rest of the season via injury. How's it feel to be back playing basketball again?
It feels great. I've been asked that a lot the past couple months, even last year. but man, I just feel recharged. Yeah. I feel like my body feels better than ever. My game feels better than ever. I was able to develop off the court, really in the film room more than ever this past year. And then just developing with the guys as much as possible. So feel recharged, feel excited and ready to play this season.
Gotcha. Anderson, you take a medical red shirt, but it's a unique one in that you're basically in the first year of a new system.
Yep.
You didn't get a chance. You played in a little bit, but for the most part, you sat and watched and kind of observed. And how much of, were you part of the coaching staff or part of, I mean, how much did you, what was your perspective as you sat out and kind of watched this new staff implement what they wanted to do?
Yeah, it's a great question. Coach Menzies and Coach Esposito have given me a lot of rein to be able to, whatever I do see, be able to come to them and have conversations about it. And that just has been something that has developed our relationship. And so player-coach relationship, I feel like I'm so much closer with them. I know exactly what the coaches want to do out there. And I think on the court, if I was on the court all year last year, I wouldn't have that same perspective. And so looking forward to now learning all that I did last season and all that I learned just from the coaches and practices and all of these different things to now putting it on the court.
So you talked about kind of a leadership position. You're back. And now in today's college basketball, there's however many new teammates that come back
exactly,
the next year.
Yep.
But you are a holdover, even if you only played in a few games last year. Like, does the coaching staff kind of rely on you to be that off the court leader? And what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's expected of me. I was named the team captain, and with that comes a lot of responsibility and expectations, but those are good things when handled correctly. And so really just what it looks like is getting to know the guys off the court, especially the new guys that are coming in. So the young guys, the freshmen that are coming in, the transfers, we have quite a few new guys, as you said, that's the kind of the landscape of college basketball. And so getting to know them off the court, getting to just build relationships, getting to know, hey, what do they like off the court? What's their background? What's their family like? Different things like that. And so on the court, we've been able to bond deeper and really just get to know each other. And trust each other. So it builds trust, and have seen that work, you know, in the first couple months of this season already.
Anderson, talk about a couple of your teammates from last year where you're going, hey, not that you're saying they're better or worse than any of the other teammates, but talk about one or two guys where you're going to go, hey, you're really going to be impressed with how this person has developed their game.
Yeah, I'm really looking for Alan Mukeba to take the next step. Obviously, he's had some troubles with injuries in the past, but I feel like he's really gotten his body right these past couple months. And then I think Tyler Andrews, I think that he's just kind of taken what the coaches have said more seriously, kind of defined his role. And I think when he does stick to his role, man, he can be really, really good and beneficial for our team and what we're trying to do. And so I would probably say those two guys.
That's awesome.
Wait, Alan Mukeba, that's a guy when he gets off the bus that the other team goes, uh-oh.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, just to be able to move the way he can, too, at his size.
Yep.
The sky's the kind of the limit for him.
Yeah.
And Andrew's such a great shooter, but didn't always show on the court
exactly
last year. So is that one of those things that you think it's just going to – it'll start to show?
Yeah, I think the reps will start to show. Okay. Obviously, people always have that freshman slump.
Mm-hmm.
In college basketball, it's just different. Yeah. You know, a lot of people – they don't really realize that until they get into college basketball. But, man, the game and how fast it is and the defense and scouting and all these things, it isn't as easy as it looks. And so as a freshman, I think it just was a little bit just was a lot at first. But I think over the first year, he's gotten so much, you know, playing time and opportunity with injuries that he was forced to develop fast.
Gotcha.
And, I've been able to see that firsthand and really excited for him.
You know, Coach Menzies talked about losing a couple of really experienced guards late and then kind of finding some replacements. How much were you involved in that and saying, hey, coach, these guys are going to be a good fit? I have to believe that had a lot to do with it because Coach Menzies talked about getting everybody involved and getting to know these guys. Hey, are they the right ones?
Yeah, exactly. He preaches, you know, what comes in the locker room. That's a really important thing just with character and on the court and off the court. And so, I was able to be a part of those decisions, being a part of going to dinner with those guys on their visits, getting to know them as people as well. And I think Cameron Foss, Jamar, Melvin, Malik, those kind of guys that are coming in, are just great guys. They've got great character off the court, and I think that's so important, just for what Coach Menzies and Coach Joe are, you know, they want to do this year. And so I'm super excited to kind of get things kind of going in the next couple of weeks and get the season started.
Gotcha. So I've got just one more question. I want to ask, so we talked before we got on air about that you did a mission trip in Georgia or Alabama this summer. So you think all the time you have to put in with basketball and school and all these things, and I would assume that someone just goes, good, it's summer. Like, I'm just going to take a lot of time and relax. But you spent time down there. Tell us a little bit about that trip and why that was important to you to do that.
Yeah, it was really important. And so this was my second summer doing that. And when Coach Menzies got the job, it was something that was on my heart, was to, grow in my faith in the summer and take 6 to 7 weeks to go with other college students from KU, Mizzou, K-State, kind of that area. And just, learn what it looks like to follow faith in college with a bunch of other guys and girls that are doing the same thing. And so when me and Coach Menzies kind of connected on that wavelength, I knew, one, right away I was going to play for him. I was going to come back and play for him. And then, two, it just has built so much trust because he knows what I value and he values that as well. And so, this summer was an amazing opportunity to grow in my faith. I give all the glory to my Lord Jesus Christ. And so that was so important for me, one, to be recharged for the season, but to continue to put that first in my life. Because basketball, it just ultimately does not satisfy me, and it hasn't in the past. And so I just feel when I do put my faith first, I just feel the freedom and the excitement and the kind of the recharging, looking forward to next season.
Gotcha. Anderson, that's great to hear. We wish you the absolute best. You know, after sitting out a year and then being able to watch Coach Menzies' step up close, you know exactly what you're stepping into. We wish you and the Ruse the absolute best this season.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys. Yeah,
thanks, Anderson.
All right. So there was Anderson Kopp. I will say about Kansas City, if that really is the ninth place KenPom team, the bottom of the league is a lot better than it has been in the past. I was amazed by the fact that the young man takes 6-7 weeks for a mission trip in the summer. I was not nearly as productive when I was in college. So kudos to him. I think we've kind of spent enough time on Kansas City, and we've even kind of spent enough time on North Dakota. I do want to talk real briefly, and then we'll go into the interview with Soten Acer Seeds. So Greg's going to have to come up with a good transition on this one, because I'm switching complete gears now. Interesting. One of the top tempo teams in the nation is Denver. One of the lowest tempo team in the nation is St. Thomas. What happens when you got those two contrasting styles? Is that just based on, because that has not always been St. Thomas, right? It kind of has been Denver. They've been pretty fast, but St. Thomas hasn't. That's just is that tend to come down to coaching decisions? Greg, did you have this is how I always want to play, or did it depend on what you had and how you were going to make it work?
It's a good question. I mean, some teams are really great at forcing tempo. I've always said the team that wants to control tempo is the team that wants to play slower, as long as they can take care of the ball. If you're a team that is turnover prone, it's tough to control tempo. But if you can take care of the ball and you're the one that wants to play slower, you're the one that's going to control tempo in that game. And even if there are teams that want to get out and press, want to get out and double, trap, whatever it might be, as long as you're under control offensively, the team that is the most disciplined on the offensive end is the one that will control tempo. So from my standpoint, as long as you can take care of the ball, you're able to control tempo. And I've always said this, when you get into postseason, everybody loves to play fast. Everybody wants to win the press conference by saying, we're going to get out and go and go and go and go. But the teams that want to value the ball, want to, break down the defense in the half court, they're the teams that typically control tempo. But that doesn't mean that they're the teams that typically win. Do you have the ability as a team to play, whether it's fast or slow, and value possession of the ball, value the ability to get defensive stops, and value the ability to create extra scoring opportunities by getting effort on the offensive glass and maybe, getting a turnover here and there. So I still believe that that's the case. the disciplined team on the offensive end that can control tempo and value the ball, they're the ones that will dictate how fast that game is played.
You know, the one thing I'll add to the tempo conversation is, I think people always focus on the offensive end, but really it comes down to like playing good defense and rebounding the ball. Because if you can't possess the ball and you can't stop anybody, you don't have any control over the tempo, and or the tempo is kind of irrelevant at that point. I think the reality of the situation is you got to be able to do it all. Like, you can't be a one-dimensional team and have a lot of success when you're playing against a lot of good teams, because these teams are too good and they're too well coached to only try to play one way. You have to kind of take what's available to you within the course of the game. And so my guess is we'll see some evening out between the way Denver plays and St. Thomas, but you can't just play one way. You have to play, you have to be able to do it all. And my guess is the situations that they've been in so far in this year have dictated that they play a certain way. But we know that by the end of the year, they're going to be in games where, you know, they're going to have to adjust and take what the defense has given them as well. So I'm curious to watch those stats as a bigger body of work starts to accumulate. Yeah.
And to that point, Zach, you know, in watching North Dakota State has typically been a team that we all think of as a very good defensive team, but also a very grinded out team on the offensive end. I've watched Dave Richmond put some trust in his perimeter kids. When they get some stops, they get out and go. And that's always what you need to be able to do. If you want to go and play a tempo, you better do it in a controlled manner. And people think, you know, there's a contrast in terms there, but there's not. You can still push the ball and continue to look for opportunities. And prior to the opposition getting a 5-on-5 defense in place, that's still transition offense. And I've seen a growth in trust that Dave has for his perimeter kids that, hey, listen, if we force a turnover, if we force a bad shot, let's get out and go. And that's something that's not common for North Dakota State's fans to see with Dave's teams. And so we'll see how it goes. A lot of it comes back to trusting the trust you put in your guys' ability to take care of the basketball.
That slow tempo play is not easy on the heart as a coach. No. It can't be. I mean, every game is so – I mean, the good part, you can win a lot of games that way, but you also just – at 55-54, I think, was the score of the Idaho State game. They've scored 60 or less points 3 times this year and 62 in another game. And it just so I mean I think some of it is with Andrew Rodigan. They just don't have the ability to penetrate they used to, so they have to kind of wait for shots to develop. But yeah, they in the span of 2 games, they had one of the better wins the league has seen and one of the worst losses the league has seen in a 2-game span, with the loss to Green Bay and the win against Portland, or Portland State. I can't remember. I think it was Portland State. But But
it's really interesting though. The slow tempo plus like almost 50% of their shots are threes. I think that's a really, really interesting combination. And I think it's really dangerous, quite frankly, because like you miss those threes and they end up being like an outlet pass going the other way, right? You know, normally teams with more that are more deliberate are more intentional about getting the ball all the way to the rim. And that's not exactly what St. Thomas is doing. And so I think St. Thomas is going to speed up. If they really want to shoot that many threes, they're going to have to play at a little better tempo, in my opinion. Or I should say, it's going to create a little bit more of a faster tempo, despite the nature of longer shots.
I don't disagree. And I think Johnny Tower is setting his team up to have the best chance of success in the Summit League. Yeah. I just think that's his approach. You know, when you watch how well they're coached, how well they value the ball, there's a sense that I have. And Green Bay, I know they're low KenPom, but they did go out and beat Montana State on their court. Yeah. They might be a little bit better than the rankings are showing. But to your point, I still think Johnny Tower knows how to coach the game. And by the way, when I say that, neither one of you are questioning that. I know that.
No,
I think he's preparing the team very well.
Yeah.
My guess is there's a couple situations where they're like, okay, we cannot get in a track meet with this team. We're going to lose that game. The best chance of winning is taking this route that maybe they don't love, but like you're just playing the odds, right? And I guess there's been quite a bit of that.
You just wouldn't have saw it from the you wouldn't have expected it, given a couple of years ago it was a little more a lot more pace. So it wouldn't have been something we'd have guessed. And side note on the guessing wrong on Kansas City, everyone just heard the Anderson Kopp interview that talked about all these guys we talked about all year before the year started. So we didn't just make that stuff up. Like, people actually did tell us. So I found that interesting listening to the interview, getting you going, yeah, that's why we said that.
But by the way, as I'm watching, I couldn't watch the game, the UND game today, but I watched the game cast on ESPN. And your boy, Sarcice, he was good down the stretch. He was good on the glass, double-double today, put some good numbers up, and they got a quality win at the multi-team event. So credit to him. Great win for UND today. How was that?
And credit to Greg on a segue to the Sultan Sarcice interview. Here we go.
All right. Well, today on the podcast, we have with us Sotne Sarcice. I got that pretty much right?
Close enough.
Oh, I didn't want to be close enough. Sotne, welcome to the podcast. We're excited to have you. Greg and I will probably just take turns asking questions, but I'm actually curious. So you were born and raised in Georgia. How did you get to Grand Forks, North Dakota? Like, how did that happen?
Well, first, I went to high school in California.
Okay.
So I was 2015.
Okay.
The all four years at Modesto Christian High School.
Gotcha.
Did my first year of junior college at Howard College in Texas. Transferred to Southern Idaho. Then I got offered by Coach Saban.
Gotcha.
Ended up.
So did you go to high school to play basketball in California, or how did that?
Yeah, play basketball and get education.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. And your whole family came and everything?
No.
No, just you. Yeah. What is that like?
I mean, it was tough at first, but I got used to it.
Okay. And did you have like a host family or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. And did you know English really well when you came over, or was that a learning curve?
Yeah, I was
struggling
a little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Life's a journey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Awesome.
That's really interesting stuff. And I'm glad. It's neat that it's brought you to this point in your career. We talked with Coach Sather a little bit about last season, kind of a slow start, but at the same time, a lot of growth throughout the course of the season. You guys kind of went on a little run and found an identity. Talk about growing into a team that you felt much more comfortable with at the end of the season than kind of how you started out.
We were struggling at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. I would say. And we just found our niche, and we just kept going, and we stayed together.
Yeah,
most important thing, and got some wins.
Talk a little bit about your game and kind of how you've expanded your game. I think you've certainly become much more of a 3-point threat.
Yeah.
Obviously, a guy that can play with his back to the basket. Yeah. You've expanded your game. Talk about how you've grown in that manner.
I feel like I've been always being like a all-around player. I think my first year at UND was just a confidence thing, shooting out from outside.
Mm-hmm.
I was shooting good in practice, but didn't translate to the games.
Right.
So summer coming in, the last year season, I was getting a lot of shots in and getting my confidence back, I guess. And paid off. So.
Good. Well, you have a lot more returners this year than coming back to North Dakota. You got Trayson, you've got BJ. Like, what? And then adding in some new players. Like, does it feel like you're going to be able to start off where you ended last season and just grow from there?
Yeah, for sure. I think we have some good transfers coming in, like Eli King, Kumar, Dang. So I think we're going to be deep, and we're gonna start strong.
Gotcha.
Coach Sather talks about the importance of becoming a better defensive team.
Yeah.
Giving yourself a better opportunity to be a successful team and get more wins. You've got to be able to get stops. How do you think you can help your team, help your teammates become a better defensive group overall. What characteristics do you think you can bring to that aspect?
I think just being a vocal leader and communicating on the floor and being able to switch on guards and stay in front of them, and also guard the bigs and the position of the rebound.
Gotcha.
We talk about being a leader on the floor and off the floor. So usually when we're interviewing somebody on media day, well, the player that gets brought is a leader on the team. Like, what has that transition been like as you become a leader, and how does that role work? Like, how do you take that transition?
I think being a leader is kind of the biggest responsibility. And like my first year, I was struggling with, I was inconsistent like with my energy.
Okay.
And I feel like my energy has been much better, and I think that helps me be a better leader.
Gotcha.
Without question, anytime you bring great effort and great energy, nobody can question your commitment. I think that's, and I believe Coach Sather's talked about that. He's seen that maturation process over the course of your career. And so that's extremely valuable. And when you look at some of the young talent you have on your team, that's what you need your upperclassmen to be doing, is bringing that energy and effort every day. And it's great to see you're able to bring that from a leadership standpoint.
Well, Sotnay, appreciate you joining us today. And, good luck this season.
Thank you, Brian.
Right, wish you the best.
All right, so Sotnay Sartsidze, I asked him to say it for me right before we got on, and then I was only close enough, but probably even worse this time. But one of the things that I find fascinating is just the journey. Basketball, what a journey. I mean, somebody found him in the country of Georgia to come play basketball in California. Then he goes to a junior college in Texas. Then he goes up to North Dakota. A year ago right now, we would have been wondering if he was even a fit for North Dakota, and now he's one of the team leaders. So it's just, you never know what you're going to get in the journey that is basketball.
I mean, a perfect example of a guy who's using basketball to really change the trajectory of his life, on and off the court. He's learning a lot of these lessons that are going to suit him well. And, when a guy goes through all that he's been through in his life, when you go to your job when you're in the real world, it's going to be like child's play for him, whatever he wants to do. And so I know he's going to be a successful guy because he's handled adversity so well. And that's what really a lot of this comes down to is, all these players, no matter how good you are, you face adversity. And some of the ones that you wouldn't expect to fold do. And, like you said, there was some time where there was a little bit of a question mark about Sotnay. There were some frustrations there, but he has really kind of came into his own. And it's just, you could just see the light coming on last year, both in terms of finishing strong around the hoop defensively and being able to knock down that three. That really kind of unlocked another part of his game that we could all see it. We could see him warming up. We could see a shot. I mean, if you've been in the gym, you know what a good shot looks like. You'd see it. He's making a lot of them in practice. He's practicing all summer. Nothing's translating to the game. And all of a sudden it's like one or two goes in. I think he made it like four at Creighton last year or something like that. And all of a sudden it's just like, okay, now I can translate this. And he becomes a totally different player, and he becomes really difficult to guard. I mean, there's a lot of times coming out of timeouts, they'll drop a three for him. This is a team with BJ Omah and Tracy Engelstaff and whatever, but they'll drop a three for Sotnay Sartsidze, and it works really well. He hit that game winner early last week, I think. And so he's really coming into his own and being an indispensable part of this team. There's going to be a lot of opportunities out there with the talented players that he plays with, and I think he's well positioned to take advantage of them.
Zach, you make some really good points. It's, as you were talking, I'm sitting there thinking, look at the development between himself and Bowden Skunberg. Two totally different types of players, but the manner in which they expanded their offensive game, and they become so much more valuable to their team as, being able to spread the floor. And just his ability as a back-to-the-basket guy in the league. And then the thing that I can't even fathom is coming from Georgia to California to North Dakota.
Similar climates.
I know. Yeah. And then yeah. One thing I want to know is how many different languages does he know? Probably about four or five. I don't know. But it's been enjoyable to watch his development, his growth. And Paul Sather has been the benefactor of the manner in which he's handled his growth and the manner in which he's challenged him and allowed him to grow as a player, as an offensive player, still a rim protector, things along those lines. What a great story, in my opinion. I just think that's one of the neat things to watch and to see how it's played out. I hope the young man has a fantastic season, you know, for UND, because I think he's very capable of it. He showed it last year. I think he's an all-league player, potentially. And if he plays at that level, the pressure he takes off of guys like B.J. Omot and Trayson Eaglestaff and the other guys that they have, UND's going to be in the conversation without question. And I think they've shown it to this point. I hope they continue to grow. And I think he's going to be a big part of it if they do.
He's just a tremendous American success story, you know. And I think the credit equally goes to him and this coaching staff. I mean, there were a lot of times where this coaching staff could have got frustrated, thrown up their hands, been overly hard on him, whatever. But they always just focused on, okay, a unique situation here. We may feel like we want to do something, but what truly is the right way to press his buttons and to kind of get him to the level of player that he needs to be? You can't treat him like everyone else, right? He just has a different experience. He's just – his background's different. And, you know, his coaching staff did a tremendous job just tapping into that and not painting everybody with, you know, broad brushstrokes.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with that. And this is one of Paul Sather's great success stories, regardless of how their team turns out. This young man has progressed in a way that we all love to see how it works out.
Well, and as much fun as it is to, you know, talk about Caleb Stewart as a transfer and Lahat Chun and Jamar Brown, Cameron Foss, whoever, the new players that come into the league, we had interviews with some players on their third year in the league today, and to watch a different, again, you said different paths, Greg, and I think that's the right way to say it, and different roles, but still the progression that we see from these players year after year, it's also a testament that you don't have to be what you were 2 years ago either. You can be something more than that, and I think that's a lesson for everybody to take in. And heck, 2 months from now, we'll be talking about these teams different than we are now. Yeah. So it'll all play out along the way. We'll probably wrap up for this week. We're at a little over an hour, so that seems like a good time to just wrap up. One of the things I want you guys to think about for next week is, as we roll into December, as we get closer and closer to Summit League play, what is one thing that you'd want to give each team as kind of, or what is one thing they need to take the next step as we think coming into next week? A couple weeks from now, we will have, I forget the name, but we have somebody from Mid-Major Madness coming in to help us preview the Big Sky Summit League Challenge, one of their Big Sky writers. So that'll be nice to have somebody with a little bit of expertise with that league. And I think that challenge will be a lot of fun. I'm excited that we're going to get a week of conference playing, and then we get to watch that. I think that will be a lot of fun. And I hope it's just the start of that kind of thing. So
sounds fun. We'll be taking notes.
All right. Well, until next week, we'll talk to you guys next Sunday. We'll be right back.